All right, and welcome back to the Narnia Web Council. Glumpuddle and Jimfan are also back. Hello, people. How are you doing today?
Doing
kind
great.
Of hanging in there, I think. A lot of news now.
Hanging in there. A lot of news. There's some video that you can check out.
Seems like we're getting something exciting almost every day.
Yeah.
It's that time of year again.
Yeah.
Briefly, I'll just say I love the look of that Gumpus has. I mean, that looks pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I'm not that crazy about it. To me, I thought it was Pug. And I probably would have liked it if it was Pug, actually.
Oh.
I think it works as Gumpus. I don't see anything that looks wrong.
There was
wrong
a question.
About it.
Maybe we should save this discussion for later, I suppose. But someone mentioned maybe they're combining Pug and Gumpus. Someone had.
No, don't jinx it.
I don't know if that'd be a bad thing, you know, to sort of simplify things and move it up. But, whatever. That's kind of maybe for another episode.
Anyway,
I don't think they're going to condense them, but I think there might be overlap. Kind of like how in Prince Caspian the movie, Glozell and Sopespian, their characters are basically almost switched from the book. Something like that. You know how they kind of gave this to this person and this to this person and it made it all work. So my guess is something like that might be happening here. That's the only reason I can think
of. Briefly, the roles of Trumpkin now. We now know that Trumpkin is not going to be in Voyage of the Dawn Treader.
Woohoo!
So that's a
huge sigh of relief.
that's a good thing. I mean, it wasn't. Frankly, I'd said before, if that was going to be the biggest change to the entire story, then overall I would have been relieved. But it wasn't an abomination. It was just unnecessary and
well,
annoying.
I think the thing for me was that it could have led to abominations. It's that including a character like that who's not in the book. I mean, I said it before, I can just envision Michael Apted in my head right now on the audio commentary saying, well, we made this change because we wanted to give Trumpkin a more active role. We wanted to give him something to do. So I could just see it leading to so many changes so easily. So I'm really relieved.
I think why he was going to be in the first place because early scripts had a significant part that Trumpkin was going to play. And now that is gone, they don't need him anymore.
I kind of wonder if maybe, when they were writing the script for Dawn Treader initially, they had, sort of doing it with the assumption that Prince Caspian would be a big hit. And I just wonder if maybe since Prince Caspian wasn't very successful, I'm not saying that's the reason they cut him, but maybe they would be just slightly less enthusiastic about including Trumpkin since Caspian wasn't that big of a hit.
I don't know, maybe.
But you see, I'm not saying they cut him out for that reason,
just
but can't see him getting that.
Because Peter Dinklage is such a great actor, maybe it would have been that much more costly.
That's true, too. Yeah, but again, the disappointing Prince Caspian box office is one of the factors behind them cutting the Dawn Treader budget a little bit. And so, yeah, that could also be a factor in not wanting to bring back an actor.
Yeah.
Right.
But anyway, today we're going to mainly focus on the synopsis. But before that, I wanted to briefly have kind of a brief discussion really could go on for an hour if we let it, but there's a thread in the forum, one of your threads, Glumpuddle, called Adaptation, What Do You Want These Movies to Be? Which I think is, I think it's important to just bring up briefly, just so that, Glumpuddle, why don't you head this discussion off?
Well, I guess I started the thread just because while I was in the forum on various threads, I was just observing that some people would say, oh, this is a horrible change, or some people would say, what do you mean, that's hardly a change at all, and some people like changes, some people were against any kind of change, and so I thought it was interesting to try to categorize different fans, and different fans want different things. And I basically say, on this thread, that there are different kinds of fans. On one end of the spectrum, you have fans who they just want to watch the book instead of reading it. They just want a word-for-word adaptation. Even small changes are just a distraction. And then you got fans on the other end of the spectrum who actually want changes. And like Peter Dinklage, I remember him saying in an interview a couple of years ago, him saying that he didn't like it when movies were just like the book because, well, then why not just read the book? And so he liked the idea of making an alternate version of the story. And so I was basically just kind of asking, when you go see this movie, what do you want as a fan of the book? What do you want to get out of it? Is kind of what I was getting at.
Yeah, And what would you say to that question, Globally?
Well, I would like to mean, before Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe came out, I was almost to that first extreme of just I wanted a more or less word for word adaptation, and it didn't matter.
Which you have with the BBC movies, huh? Is almost word for
yes,
word.
Yes, and I've kind of broadly speaking, I would say that I don't like BBC because if you take a great book and turn it into a not great movie, and I don't care how accurate you were, it's not a faithful adaptation. At least that's not what I would say. I mean, to me, the BBC versions kind of put me to sleep. The books do not. And so I would say, oh, the BBC, a bad adaptation, even though it's word for word. And so I think because Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, the Disney version, was, you know, very few changes, and yet there was something about it I wasn't quite satisfied. I like it, but there was, from an adaptation point of view, I just felt like it was missing something. So I kind of spent the next couple of years wondering why and figuring out why that was, and came to sort of say, well, you know what I want to see? I want to see movie versions of these stories. You know, I want to see this story as it would have been done if it was a movie. So to that end, you would say, what are the most important elements of the story? What is it that makes this story what it is? What are the important themes and ideas that everyone remembers? And what's the basic, very basic story? And make it, and then take all that and do it as you would do it if it was a movie. So I've kind of gone on to wanting to see these books that I love so much told in a cinematic way. I think that's exciting.
Yeah.
How about you, Jim Fenn?
Well, my general feeling is that as long as if they can get the essence of the book, they can get the themes right, what they do within the theme, as long as it still fits, you know, it's got to be true to the spirit of the book, which is why I didn't have as much of a problem with Prince Caspian as I thought I might, because it fit the theme. And it kept to the spirit of the book, even though it had a lot of changes. It was a good movie because it didn't just like try and change the essence of the book and the theme of the book and the whole reason. I'm tripping over my tongue. But yeah. So that's what I'm hoping for Dawn Treader, is that they will keep to the theme of, you know, the sense of discovery and adventure, and whatever changes they make within that, I can live with it as long as there's a good reason and it fits with the theme. So that's my idea.
Well, I think that it's kind of funny for me looking back at The Lord of the Rings, because I was really against a lot of the changes that were being made back then. And they were little tiny, tiny things, like whether or not Pippin dropped a stone or whether he knocked the skeleton into the well, you know, and we were just irate about those things. But I think now I on one level I still love the little details, because, you know, when I see the blue bottle in the windowsill or the mothballs coming out of the wardrobe, there's little things that I just go, oh, that's just like in the book, and I love that. And I think it's great if they can do that, because it really is something that's very easy to do, and there's no reason not to do it, if you understand my meaning.
Yeah.
But I think basically, I basically prioritize them, not necessarily in any order here, but with Narnia, as far as what to bring over, you have to bring over the story, because these are great stories, and you don't necessarily have to get every little part of the story, but basically, you really do have to get it right, and maybe with varying degrees to each one, because maybe in some, like in Prince Caspian, getting the story told just like it was in the book isn't as important to me as it might be with Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe.
Well told in the book and turn it into a story that seems poorly told in a movie, that's not good adaptation.
Exactly. And I think one thing that I'm very unforgiving on as far as changes is characters, because that's one reason why people love these books so much, is they have these great characters, and that's one reason why I was kind of... why Prince Caspian was kind of a mixed bag for me, because they had Reepy Cheep, which I felt was amazingly well done, and then they had Peter, who I felt was
the ball there
almost butchered, and so it was that was a real mix for me, and I think, you know, why even do this? Why even try to make this Peter into an interesting character if you're just going to change him from where he was in the book?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, finally, for me, it, again, getting back to what Jim's fan said about the themes, I mean, for me, those are the most important things. And the details, in many ways, if they're following the others closely enough, you know, the details, I'd love for the details to be there, the little nuances that the book had. It doesn't have to have all of them, you know, but it could be little tiny things thrown in there just for the fans. And that's one reason why I love The Lord of the Rings so much, is, you know, on overall, as far as the story, they told the story of The Lord of the Rings well. They got a lot of the themes across, and the characters were they're faithful to the characters. And yes, I have gripes with each part in little areas, but for as a rule, it was done well. And I think that's one reason that I sometimes look to The Lord of the Rings now as a standard, is because I see so many people who love the books that also love the movies. Maybe they love the movies less, but that's okay. They still enjoy the movies. And most people I talk to like or love the movies who, if they haven't read the books or book.
Yeah, I think the big thing it comes down for me is that the movie should stand alone. An example being that if I talk to someone who has read the book but has not seen the movie, and then I talk to someone who has seen the movie but not read the book, and ask them, "Well, what's the movie about, or what's the book about? Like, what were the important parts of it?" I should get essentially the same answers, like the
Exactly.
same, even though not all the, even though. You know, someone who has not read the book should be able to go to the movie and understand what's the story really like. What are the important parts of it? Why do people like the book? Come out with the correct impression of why people like the book, even if they're not getting all the details. Bottom line, it's a great book. It should also be a great movie.
Yeah, and then, again, like some people pointing out, I think there was someone on the forum who just discovered that the witch is wearing Aslan's mane in The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe at the battle, and they just found that out. And you know, that's something. Is it in the book? No, but
Such a
does it
detail.
work really well for the movie? Yeah, I
Yeah,
think it
that's
does, and
adaptation,
I
just
love it.
emphasizing that idea that she's sort of taken Aslan's place, but doing that visually.
Yeah. And it's not really a contradiction of the book either,
No.
but you know that's a per I said, well, that's a perfect example of, you know, a part of the movie I really enjoy that, you know, I'm not going to say, well, that makes it better than the book. No, but it's something that I get from the movie that I don't get from the book.
Yeah,
They're
it
not
adds
going to
something
be
to
the
it.
same experience.
It
It
doesn't
just takes
technically
what's in the
cut.
book and kind of, you know, sort of emphasizes it.
Yeah, and I think when people try to make a book or they try to turn a book into a movie and they try to make it the same experience, it completely fails. You know, when you try, if you were to do the opposite, you wouldn't hand people a movie script if you wanted to do a book of a movie.
Yeah.
You know, it would fail that way. So
So.
that's kind of what I'm looking at. And I wanted to have this discussion briefly just before we led into the discussion on the synopsis.
Because they sort of
And
tie together.
yeah.
yeah, and I'm actually going to start off with this is an email that I mentioned last time from Matthias Agnesund in Gothenburg, Sweden. So, hello, Matthias, and thanks for the email. He says, "Dear Rillian, thanks for the delightful podcast. I often feel like chiming in on your discussion, so I thought I'd write to ju to put a few questions for the council. First, it is an absolute thrill that they are finally filming Don Treader. Thank you, we agree. It seems to be many people's favorite chronicle, and I think I rank it as the best alongside The Last Battle. Apart from merely literary quality, though, the philosophical depth and the emotional thrust of the thoroughly spiritual journey of the Treader makes it the far most important chronicle for me. In fact, I hold it as one of the most important books by any author. They just have to get it right. That feeling is so much stronger than any objections I have had to adaptation changes to previous movies or even The Lord of the Rings. A major concern has already appeared as the press release speaks of an, quote, unfathomable fate, unquote, awaiting Narnia should the mission fail. That is plain ridiculous and a major alteration of the story's basic premise. The search for the Seven Lords is indeed a luxury that Caspian can only afford after having restored peace to Narnia. Do you think this is such a marketing cliche? Just a marketing cliche to sell in the film. A fantasy epic simply must be an imminent disaster. Be about imminent disaster, or will they actually implement such a scenario? If they will, what is your guess as how this will mix with the original narrative? Is the White Witch up for another comeback? Has the crew got to collect seven Horcruxes along with the seven lords to stop that? Another question before I conclude for now. Do you think Caspian's encounter with Aslan towards the end will be shown on screen? I think it's essential that it will not be shown because the changes in Caspian's look and behavior are so telling in and of themselves. A great challenge for Ben Barnes, if only he is given the chance. Best regards, Matthias.
So
I thought he spelled out quite a lot as far as just the different possibilities, what it could be.
Yeah,
and I wanted to start off with that.
And let me just make it clear that this is the press release that came out on July the 27th. And at the end of the synopsis, it says that only on an entirely uncharted journey to Aslan's country can they save Narnia and all the astonishing creatures in it from an unfathomable fate. Ha! Which in the book, you know, it's the Seven Lords. That's in essence the reason they set out. It's not like they're trying to save Narnia from something. So it's that definitely
sounds. The reason why they're out there is because they've already saved Narnia. Narnia doesn't need saving anymore.
Right. And now again, we're hearing just kind of what he was saying in the letter. It just seems like the cliche where, well, we can't have an epic fantasy movie unless it's about saving the world. And it misses the point of Dawn Treader, where Dawn Treader is a personal story about a journey to the end of the world and what they learn along the way. And sure, on paper, the reason they set out in the first place is to find the Seven Lords. But if you really read the book, you almost get the sense that all the characters want to go east, especially Reepicheep. They want to see what's out there. And the search for the Seven Lords is simply the perfect excuse to do that.
Yeah. I think you're kind of hitting on – I mean, let's just kind of – at this point – I'm not really talking about the magnitude of how much of a fate it is, okay? Maybe it's exaggerated. Maybe there's nothing there in the actual script.
It could be exaggerated. This is a synopsis.
Let's imagine for now it's either small and exaggerated or it is a big thing. My problem is, kind of like what you said, it's a distraction from what the story really is. I mean, these characters want to go east. They want to learn. They want to explore. They want to have this great adventure. It's not like a, oh, what was us? If only we didn't have to do this, and if only peace could once again come tonight. No, I mean, that's what you needed for the first two, because it's, oh, if only these days were the good days, and we were, you know, back to the good days. If only we had got rid of the witch, or, oh, if only we didn't have Miraz. If only we could, you know, let's fight to get back to the good days. No, these are the good days.
Exactly.
These are the good days, and it's important that, you know, this not become another tale of, oh, woe is us.
Right. And obviously, you know, from a film perspective, they're always looking through that through line of what the story's about and what's the conflict. The conflict here is a very character-driven conflict, I think. It's about what these characters learn along the way. If the audience is getting caught up in, oh, how are they going to save Narnia, I think they've completely taken their eye off the ball. That's not where they should be looking.
Yeah. And I think, you know, it's not like, again, it's not like they don't have conflicts along the way. It's not like this story completely lacks danger. I mean, as far as excitement, in many ways, this story has more excitement than The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe did.
Yeah.
Because it has more things going on and more amazing places that they go and really incredible things that happen. And it's not all about big battles. It's about people and the places they go. And why there's a reason why it's everyone's favorite book. It's not everyone's favorite book just because it has a cool name. It's a good story, and they don't have to change that. So,
yeah, this is a question. This does seem. I mean, obviously, I mean, I think we've got to cut to the chase. I think the first thing that popped into a lot of people's minds was that leaked script. How much are we going to talk about the leaked script here, Rillian?
Let's talk about what they were trying to accomplish with the things that were changing in the leaked script. I mean. We don't have to talk about each individual thing, but maybe
there are some
individual
things I think to be discussed because there's so much discussion about them in the forum right now.
Yeah,
I mean, like of an unfathomable fate. The first thing that popped into everyone's mind, and this might be the first time this has been uttered on this podcast, but it was the idea of the Lady of the Green Kirtle being included in the story, and this whole
which is dreadful.
Huh? Yeah, and this whole the script that leaked online last year, it was said to be a highly experimental draft, and I was never all that worried about the specifics of it. I mean, I never thought they were really going to put the Lady of the Green Kirtle in the movie. I never really thought there was going to be a soul-eating monster that was sending souls to the east, and they had to go to the east and
No, it's a soul-eating Cave of Doom. Get it right.
Oh, sorry. I'm sorry I'm getting all the details. beautiful piece of literature wrong. No, it was terrible. But I was never worried about the specifics. It was more about, because yeah, it was a very, very, very early draft. So you look at it from the perspective of what are the issues they're trying to confront? What exactly are they experimenting with? And the thing I took away from it was, okay, it seems like they're struggling with, how do we make the journey more compelling? We have to make it about more than just the Seven Lords.
They want to up the stakes. You know,
exactly. It's like, the Seven Lords isn't compelling enough for the audience to care about the voyage, so we have to make it about saving the world or something like that.
They have to make it more epic.
Exactly. That seems to be the issue they're trying to discuss. And to do that is to miss the point. If anything, they should say, well, if that really is a problem, we need to find a way to make the characters as interesting and compelling and get the audience caught up in that story. Above all, I think the audience should really want to know what lies east, because that journey, that thrill of journeying into the unknown, to me, is such a big part of Dawn Treader. The audience should be saying, well, what happened to the Seven Lords? It's kind of eerie. They left and never came back. So what happened to them? And what's going to happen to these characters? That's what the story is about.
I would really like to take this brief moment to, since I hear the word epic used so much, I think this is the Oxford Dictionary, but this is the definitions for an epic, just so that we all get it right. A long poem, typically one derived from ancient oral tradition, narrating the deeds and adventures of heroic or legendary figures, or a history of a nation. Two, the genre of such poems, or three, and this is the one actually, in many ways, The Voyage of the Dawn Treader is the most epic of any of the Narnia stories. It's a long film, book, or other work portraying heroic deeds and adventures or covering an extended period of time.
But that's not how Hollywood thinks of epic. Hollywood thinks of epic is a lot of big wide shots, a lot of visual effects, a journey to save the world.
They think of Transformers, which is a problem. They think Transformers was epic.
Like, it was big and there was a lot going on. It looked expensive. Yeah, I mean, you can't have a character-driven stories apparently can't be epic. But I say it in kind of a sarcastic way.
Yeah, and I think it's confusing to me, and you know what, I'd like to think, and I kind of do think, that Michael Apted had nothing to do with that leaked script.
Because that's not him. That's not his style.
No, it's not. And I think, you know, Michael Apted, you can do this. You know, you just have to go out and watch Amazing Grace. You can do this. You can do a story that's character-driven. You don't have to do a story. You're not Michael Bay. You are not Michael Bay. I want to hang around on the set, see what the signs. You're not Michael Bay.
The leaked script. I really think that. I mean, we're only bringing it up because in the forum, that was kind of the first thing that came to mind. I've never been, again, worried in the least about the specifics of the leaked script. I mean, I'm sure there were probably drafts of Prince Caspian and Wardrobe that were just as atrocious as what we're seeing here, and this somehow
yes, took place in Los Angeles. And they involved pizza.
Oh,
I bet you it can get worse than this. I'll bet you it's solely in Cave of Doom. I just don't.
I can't prove it to you, but I'll bet you there was. Because in the beginning stages, you try absolutely everything. And when it doesn't work, you learn why it doesn't work. And so, I mean, that's why, again, the production strive for secrecy. Because they don't want you to see what's going on. And like when they're just experimenting with it and playing around. Because then all this negative buzz will start. That's completely unfair. And so this was something that's experimental in the sense of it's sort of like let's poke the story and see what it does. Let's just, well, what if we did this? What if we did this? And then so you start to figure out what the issues are and what direction you might need to go. The specifics aren't important. That's why it's experimental. It's just
I was never as convinced that this was as experimental as you're making it out to be, especially when concept art started popping up.
Yeah, that concept art. You're talking about the concept art that was taken down because it depicts scenes that are not in the film. You mean
that matched the script? Yeah,
that matched. So it was concept art that was being done when they were playing around with these concepts and ideas and seeing what would happen. So that makes perfect sense, and it was taken down because I think that should be comforting for anyone who hates the leaked script, which is pretty much every sane person here. They just came out and said these scenes won't be depicted in the movie. They just came out and said it there.
Yeah, I think, again, it's sort of, you know, this problem of, well, okay, they're not going to do that, but what will they do? It's, you know, again,
Exactly.
this need for upping the stakes. And, you know, it's kind of funny because I remember there were some changes that were, we heard, you know, with Lord of the Rings, you know, they were just, oh, they're rumors, and they never actually did it. And then after the films came out, we found out, oh, no, they did film Liv Tyler at Helm's Deep. Oh, no, they did film Aragorn fighting Sauron at the Black Gate. And we're going, wait, what? But, yeah, they were able to see, oh, well, yeah, we did that. But then we realized, you know, Tolkien was right, and it really works better to not do that. And I'm going, oh, well, at least you know, came to your senses. But,
if you hadn't.
well, it's one of those things that, and as far as how experimental it is, I really don't know. I mean, on one level, I'm amazed that our leaked script for April Fool's was not as bad as this. I think, wow, we thought we were going overboard.
Yeah,
Nope,
it's,
they
again, this
can
was
beat
something that
us. You
was
were
not
quite mild in comparison.
something that was not ever meant to be seen. Like, they probably weren't even really, they probably, it was just some random doodles from these guys, and oh my gosh, now it's online and people think it's gonna be the
No,
movie.
I don't know if
they
it was really a
weren't.
random doodle. I think you're going too far to say it was a random doodle
I
because
don't think
I've.
I'm going that far by saying that. I think it's just sort of a very sort of freeing experience, just saying let's just sort of mess around and see what happens. And it's just sort of when you're trying to focus on what's this story about, you play around with it until you can get your head around the story. That's the process of
Well, you
making a
don't
movie.
have to go like scrape the bottom of the scum pile and then work your way up. You know, you can start, you know, water level.
I
I
mean, I think you do. I think you got to go over the deep end and just try everything and not be afraid to just do whatever
here's
springs to your mind, whatever
I'm
solution you might see in the moment.
I feel bad. I feel bad comparing this to the Lord of the Rings because it really isn't quite fair. But I will say this, and Glumpuddle, maybe you can compare this to Harry Potter as far as the film adaptations. And all the stuff they were doing with the Lord of the Rings, I never once heard of a script where the main focus of the story was not about simply destroying the ring. I never heard of a version where that was changed. But then, of course, you know,
That's an
that's
incredibly
that.
compelling thing to get caught up in, you know?
Yeah, but then, of course, they probably thought, well, the stakes are already high enough. I'm just afraid, you know, we've already talked about. You know, people have done their little descriptions of, you know, what they think the trailers will be like, and even it was funny because even on Narniweb, people were upping the stakes
Yeah.
for Prince Caspian as far as how many men Miraz had and things like that. And we're going, whoa! He didn't have 100,000 men, you know? Come on! But I can, it just it makes me think that, you know, well, you try to up the stakes in The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe or Prince Caspian. Well, you can't really up the stakes much higher, and it. It works well to have high stakes there, but it's like they're. I'm just afraid that people will miss it and that they don't really realize. Look, it's okay for each Narnia story to be different. And you know, we've talked
Exactly.
about this before, Glumpuddle, and I think that's something that could possibly scare them is, you know, audiences. You know, will this lose an audience? Oh my goodness! What if we did a story that was completely character driven, didn't have a save the world or
Yes.
save Narnia idea, and people come in expecting the first two, and they, oh my goodness, what? There's no armies? Come on!
It's that Hollywood thing of, you know, we've got to take this story and try to sell it to a mass audience. You know, it's just that thing
Well,
that you
I
just
don't think.
can't get away
Yeah,
from.
I don't know if it's
well,
even so much a,
here's my thinking
yeah.
real quick. Because of the way Prince Caspian performed in the box office, and because we're dealing with a new production company,
And
there
director.
may not be, yeah, there may not be that much of a pressure to make it fit with the other two because they say, been there, done that, didn't work. Maybe they have the freedom to want to go in a new direction. I hope so. Just to throw
Yeah,
that out.
that's a good point. That's a good point, I think. And we've heard a little bit about a sort of wanting to go back to the Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe kind of style and not do a Prince Caspian thing. And yeah, new studio, new director. So yeah.
And totally new style for the film. I mean, just looking at the sets and stuff. I mean,
I'm trying
it
to
looks
remember though.
nothing like Prince Caspian and Lion, Witch, Wardrobe did. I mean, it's
Yeah.
like sunny and water, and it just looks
Right. Well,
different,
it
you
does
know?
none of it takes place in Narnia, you know? So that
I'm
makes
trying
sense.
to remember when did the script come out as with relation to the studio drop?
It came out in June of 2008. It was shortly after Eustace was cast, actually, or maybe shortly before. It was around
Right,
that
right.
time.
So, but it was before Disney dropped.
It was several months before
Disney
dropped.
This had been written before Prince Caspian came out.
I just want to say, I think we're probably I'm only talking about the script because it's being brought up in the forum a lot. I really, to me, that script is just gone. It's a thing of the past.
But again, and, getting back to...
I mean, the issue here is that, also it's important to bring up, there are reasons to be optimistic about this. I mean, this same synopsis also says they're going to meet magical duffel puds. And I'm not worried about the duffel buds actually having magical powers. It's just something where this always happens in a synopsis where they're trying to make it sound more interesting and exciting than it is and try to get people interested in it. And so an unfathomable fate, well, never mind how fathomable it is. It's just that idea, well, okay, like never mind that old leaked script. Never mind it. Just throw it out. Try to forget it if you can. Just the idea that, okay, they want to put more on the line than the Seven Lords. That's all we should take away from this, I think. We have no idea what it is.
This is kind of funny. Okay, it's actually, they use the word epic here. It says, veteran filmmaker Michael Apted, the 007 epic, The World Is Not Enough. Really, James Bond is epic now?
Oh,
come on.
Everything. They're just trying to make it sound as
Charles
exciting.
Webb is epic.
Sure, why not? But that's all I'm trying to say. Just keep in mind that this synopsis is all about marketing, and I don't think that we should freak out too much over the word unfathomable. It's just okay, but still, that basic idea does concern me. That like if they're going to make it about more, they might do it as just a little detail. It's like, well, big deal. They're still looking for the Seven Lords. We're just also making it about something else too. It might be very easy to look at that as a little detail, but it could so easily shift the emphasis from where it needs to be, which is on the characters and on the excitement of going to the unknown and what they learn along the way.
Right.
Yeah, I think that's why I kind of said, okay, let's say this is extremely exaggerated, and but they do change the focus a little bit. You know, that's where, I'm not trying to I'm trying to not overreact, but still realize, okay, well, maybe they got this from nothing. Maybe they completely made up the thing about any kind of fate for Narnia and all its inhabitants.
It would be pretty unfathomable if the Dawn Treader sank and the king died and in heaven as well, I mean, like, if the mission failed, essentially. So, they could easily just be, totally pulling this out of nowhere. Or taking a pretty little thing in the movie and just turning it into a big thing for a synopsis. We just don't know for sure.
My fear, basically, is not that it will be, like, the leaked script, but that they'll still change things and, like you said, change the reason for the voyage and make it more more battles and more fighting and try to make it more exciting, and they sacrifice the characters in the story because of that. That's my fear.
Constant concern among Narnia fans is sort of adding humor, adding romance, and adding action scenes are the three primary fears we're always talking about.
Well, it's funny because, as far as, I won't say action, I'll say drama. Okay, there's an island where your worst nightmares come true. There's a place where they don't know what kind of magician is in this house. They have a sea serpent. They have their king kidnapped by slave traders. There's drama here. It's not like they're completely – it's not like the story lacks excitement.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
But how exciting does all that stuff look in a trailer? I think that's what they're thinking about from a marketing perspective.
Sure. Well, you can't do the trailers the way you would the other ones.
Well, think about this. I mean, the pictures that we just got today, the pictures and the little video clip, that can be an example of taking something and – upping it, to the next level of epicness, which I don't think personally is the case here, but just use that as an example.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, again, we were talking about at the beginning, that we don't need a word-for-word adaptation is not the best thing because it's not going to be – you're not going to get – there are things that work in a book that don't work in a movie. And so we understand changes, but here this seems to be fundamentally missing with what the story is really about. It's shifting the emphasis. It almost sounds like just like as far as accuracy, I think that essentially the same things that happen in the book will happen in the movie in more or less the same order. I'm really not worried about accuracy. I'm just more worried about the larger idea of what's the story really about. And this press release makes me think. Well, I almost wonder if it's not quite going to be about the same thing. It's not quite going to be about this personal journey and the awesomeness and the adventure of sailing into the unknown, it's going to be about trying to save Narnia from something. That's my fear.
Well, I think it's a legitimate fear. Even honestly, even without the press release, it's a possibility that I'm trying to, you know, I'm not even going to say brace myself for, because if it hits me and it kills me, fine, you know. I'll die with my beloved story of Voyage of the Dawn Treader.
Exactly. And
I'll be reading the book in the grave.
Yeah, either way, I mean, basis of, you know, just individual scenes, I'm sure it'll be very exciting to see Deathwater in the Duffelpud and the Dark Island. All that stuff will be very exciting. It's just, you know, so I'm sure there'll be a lot for me to get out of this as a fan. But, you know, the important thing, of course, is the larger story and the themes, and that's what I'm worried about.
The thing is, I have friends, because I'm so into the Narnia movies as far as what's going on, and people know that, my friends know that, and they ask me, oh, so how's Voyage of the Dawn Treader looking? I'm going,
we don't really know.
I said, well, there's some good things. I really like the cast so far.
Important to remember that there's so little to go off here. I mean, just again, this some we don't even know who wrote this. They just wrote Unfathomable Fate. It could mean absolutely nothing for all we know. It's really, you know, there's no reason to despair over this. There's just reason to be a little concerned.
Yeah.
Yeah, and just to keep – don't get too easy. Don't – rest, you know, just sit back and let it go as it go, you know, make your voice heard, you know, make your concerns heard, because, you know, you might help prevent the second Arwen at Helm's Deep.
Narniweb.com/forum. That's where it's at.
That's where
make
it's
your voice
all
heard.
At. So, and again, if you want to email us, you know, we don't really have time for all the emails we get. But I do like to read the emails. I think one time we did read all the emails and it ended up being, about an hour and 20-minute long podcast.
Because we kept getting distracted.
Yeah, well, you know, anyway. again, if you want to email questions for the podcast, email rillian@narniweb.com with subject line podcast. And then you guys have emails. You finally got them yesterday. No, just kidding.
No, we've always had them, just don't say them on the podcast.
Mm-hmm. Oh, really?
It is not glumpuddle@narniweb.com. Definitely not.
If you just forget you heard glumpuddle@narniweb.com. And you never heard Sparrow, webmaster at sparrowoom.net.
No, of course not. You better spell it right, too.
Yeah.
Sparrowoom.
Or you have no business listening to this podcast.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And Jim Fan is a woman, so don't say webmister at sparrowoom.net. Thank you very much, you two.
These are, by the way, I just want to say, I mean, these podcasts are cool just because, you know, we can, you know, after we see the movie or in a couple of years, you know, we can look back and see what we thought. You know, I mean, maybe we'll listen to this podcast a few years from now and say, I can't believe we were so worried about that. I mean, for me, the leak script is just a thing of the past. I mean, maybe this will be too.
Yeah.
Maybe we'll listen to it and go, I can't believe we freaked out over that. It was nothing.
It's really amusing for me to go back on the podcast and hear you, Glumpuddle, say, you know, the romance thing is probably a light peck on the cheek.
I like to go back into that thread when we were discussing April Fool's jokes and read that part where you said, Caspian Susan romance. That's what I like to read.
Hey, I never said it was a romance. I said it was a flirtation. I never said it was a full-blown romance.
All right. Well, further up and further.
next up on global warming. Thanks,
all right,
guys.
Well, we're going to have quite a bit to talk about in the next one. There's pictures and video today, so be continued, I guess.
Oh, it's always to be continued. We could have, honestly, if we kept going like this, we could have a 20-parter, you know.
That would be fun.
Voyage of the Dawn Treader Podcast Part 1. Voyage of the Dawn Treader Podcast.
Just go to the front page, read the news. It's all there.
Yeah, exactly.